Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a Triad production. I'm your host, Charlie Dixon, and today I am joined by Dr. John Grohol. John is the publisher of The New England Psychologist, a 32-year-old quarterly trade publication for clinical psychologists in the New England region. John has played a transformative role in making mental health resources accessible on the internet. In 1995, he founded Psych Central, the WebMD of mental health online, where he was also its CEO, editor-in-chief, and a regular contributor. He sold Psych Central in 2020 to Healthline. In 1999, he joined the first online therapy company in Boston, Help Horizons, as the youngest chief operating officer in the industry. He oversaw that company's successful sale in 2006. In 2001, John created one of the first online mental health support groups, My Support Forums, which is still run today by John and a team of volunteers. He's both a published book author and researcher. John is also one of the co-founders of the Society for Participatory Medicine, a nonprofit that seeks to help patients become equal partners in their healthcare decisions. I'm excited to have John with us today to discuss the importance of independent journalism and his work with the New England Psychologist. Welcome to the show, John.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So can you start out by telling us what brought you into publishing and what inspired the New England Psychologist?
Sure thing, Charlie. I was trained as a clinical psychologist, and when I came out of school and instead of going into psychotherapy and doing therapy with people one-on-one, I actually got involved in building a website to help people better understand mental health concerns, the symptoms of mental illness. And this was way back in 1995. So this was at the start of the World Wide Web on the internet. And I did that more consumer-facing, right? Because that's where all the audience was back then. Psychologists and clinical social workers and other clinicians, they came on to the internet, you know, they tended to be a little bit later, 5-10 years. It was more of a popular thing to do things on the internet that were more entertaining and right. Social. Facebook started 20 years ago. So I didn't start really becoming interested in the professional component of education and helping clinicians have resources to better do their job until a little bit later in my career. I started a website called Psych Central, and that was mostly consumer facing. It was all information about psychology and mental health for consumers, for normal individuals looking for ideas about, like, what are the symptoms of depression? Can I take a quiz to learn more about depression, that kind of thing. It was around 2012 where we started a professional section on that website for professionals, for clinicians. Okay. We really wanted to focus on providing them with additional resources and information and research findings and things like that, that they could actually put into practical use in their practice every day. As that went along and we continued building out that section of the website, it just came up that the founder of New England Psychologist, her name is Denise Yoakum. She founded the publication in 1993 as the Massachusetts Psychologist. It was only for Massachusetts in 1993. She expanded that in 2002 to include all 6 New England states. And in 2018, she came to me and was looking to sell the publication. She had been doing it for almost, I think, about 28 years at that point. Mm-hmm. And she wanted a new professional to take over and help usher it through the next, you know, decade or two of its life. And I actually thought it was a pretty interesting fit. I am a 100% online publisher up to that point. Okay. And so I wasn't super familiar with the print publishing world. I knew that it definitely had its challenges, because of all of the material costs involved in actual print publishing, the printing costs, and then unbeknownst to me, a big component of that are the mailing costs, because we actually mail our publication out to every licensed clinical psychologist in the six New England states. So that's over 10,000 psychologists.
Wow.
And that is a very much more expensive proposition than than putting information online, which is practically right. free. So there was definitely a learning curve in 2018, 2019, where I was getting up to speed, and Denise helped me. And she actually has such a great, half of the success of any publication, whether it's online or in print, is really the team you put together. Right. She already had an existing editor-in-chief that we actually shared. And that's how I got to know her, is because we actually... the editor for New England Psychologist was also an editor for a part of our website. So that is how I got into publishing New England Psychologist, is taking it over in 2018. And that was just over 5 years ago.
Wow. Well, congratulations on the long-term success of the publication. Tell me a bit more about it. I do understand that it is mailed out to over 10,000 psychologists in that region, the New England region. Tell me more about it.
Yeah, sure. So we focus on providing news and stories that would be of interest to clinical psychologists in the six New England states: Connecticut, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, and Rhode Island. So a lot of that is going through what's happening in those states from a policy perspective, what is going on with them in terms of inpatient facilities and other hospitals that may be opening or closing their doors, and talking about larger trends in clinical psychology in terms of practice and how different influences in the economy might be affecting the practice, both positively and negatively. For instance, COVID-19 was a huge hit to everyone who was in practice. And we highlight those kinds of stories in every issue. We now publish four times a year, quarterly, and we also publish online every month. So we have sort of a dual system right now, where we still get that physical publication in the hands of people who would like it, but we also do online updates on a more regular basis. So it seems to be a good balance of those two things.
Got you. So in addition to like policy perspective and things like that, what type of topics does the publication cover?
Yeah, so, you know, some of the topics in our recent issue, for instance, we talk about both policy issues and clinical issues. So, for instance, New York recently is considering a ban on corporal punishment in both public and private facilities, whereas a lot of states don't have that kind of ban in place. We talk about when residential inpatient facilities and other kinds of treatment facilities like that might receive a grant or a government award or something like that. We talk about policy issues, about when new laws are being proposed that will either help or harm the industry, help or harm citizens of each state. For instance, Connecticut made some recommendations about how to improve behavioral health for teenagers and children recently that is winding its way through the state legislature. So those are the kinds of topics that we cover on a regular basis. If there's new research that we feel is, you know, really large and impactful and might have a reason to share. For instance, there's a Stress in America survey that comes out every year, and we talk about those findings, how teenagers and children especially have been under more stress since COVID-19, and their mental health seems to be especially at risk. And so it really kind of it covers the whole gambit of different topics that might be of interest to a practitioner who has to, you know, not only help the people that they see on a day-to-day basis, but also understand like the impact of an insurance change or change in a state law that might impact their practice or the business side of the practice.
Right. And so these publications, are they written by you, or who are they written by?
We have a staff of writers, freelance writers that we've been working with for, in some cases, over a decade and 15, 20 years for one or two of them. They know what we're looking for in terms of style and content. They conduct interviews with the people that are mentioned in the article. So we have firsthand information. We're not just getting it from a news release or a press release or something. We actually go out and talk to the people who are mentioned in a news article or something that, you know, a facility wants us to know about. And a lot of times we pass on stories that aren't really stories, right? You know, because they're lots of times, you know, there's a press release or something that says, hey, you know, we've done this and it's, you know, we promoted someone. Okay, that's great. But that's not going to be of broad interest to, you know, clinical practitioners in six New England states. So.
Right. So can you tell us some of the trends that you are seeing in the changes in psychology and how practitioners are working with their clients?
Sure. I mean, I think one of the biggest changes that I'm sure most practitioners have noticed is that because of COVID-19, the embracing of telehealth has really done a 180, whereas before COVID-19, you know, whether you're going to be reimbursed for a telehealth appointment, video conferencing or not, it really kind of depended on each individual patient and circumstances and diagnosis and this and that and the other thing.
Right.
Now it's broadly accepted. We have seen such a move where I know therapists who now only see patients doing telehealth. That's their preferred modality. You don't need to come into my office. And for some therapists, especially, you know, if you're contemplating retirement or something like that, you know, the cost of maintaining an office and the physical space, the lease, things like that, you can now, you know, conduct your business in a more economical manner from the comforts of your home. So I think that's been a sea change and a positive one, because we've known for a very long time that you can conduct psychotherapy via the internet. Probably, I would argue we've known that for two decades, and it's taken this long for it to become more of a widely accepted practice. So
we'll be right back after word from our sponsor.
Nearly 9 in 10 registered voters believe the nation faces a mental health crisis, according to a new USA Today Suffolk University poll. Americans are more concerned than ever about their mental health. Mental Health First Aid provides the resources and training to identify, understand, and respond to signs of mental health and substance use challenges. It provides the confidence and skills needed to offer life-saving assistance, and it provides peace of mind. Our experts provide mental health first aid training for adults, teens, caregivers, veterans, law enforcement, EMS, and school faculty. Mental health concerns are on the rise, but evidence-based training through mental health first aid can make a difference. Visit mentalhealthfirstaid.org to find a course near you, or email hello@mentalhealthfirstaid.org to schedule a training. Courses are available for individuals, groups, organizations, and companies of all sizes. Visit mentalhealthfirstaid.org and make a difference in your community.
Nice. And so you mentioned the writers are independent contractors. Some of them you have been working with for over 20 years or so. I really appreciate that you're using independent journalists, because a lot of times we hear people in the media and they have a set area that they're working from or a set perspective that they're coming from. So can you discuss some of the benefits of using an independent journalist versus just, like you mentioned, getting headlines from the local news?
Sure. I mean, that's what a lot of, like, for instance, websites do that are based in new media and new journalism. They'll have someone kind of rewrite a news release or a press release from an organization and then post it to their website. And the process will take all of 20 minutes. I've seen it done. The difference with a publication like ours is that it's based upon having independent contributors who we have experience with, we have a known track record with. We know that they're not coming at it from a certain angle. They are not like industry shills for any particular side of a story. And, you know, our editor-in-chief makes sure that when we present an article, we're getting both sides of the story. We're trying, especially if it's something controversial. I'm very sensitive to needing to understand a few things. One, how does this impact a practitioner in private practice today? Because that's the question I increasingly ask myself more and more often. And if it doesn't have any kind of impact, so why are we interested in the story? There has to be that goal for the story to have, which is it has to be something that isn't just of hypothetical interest. And that's why we stay away from going through a lot of research results, because so much research is, you know, based upon a study of 80 college students or something of that nature, right, which is not generalizable. It's not broadly based, you know, kind of research. And so something like that would need to be replicated a few times, larger study, that kind of thing. So you can read something on the internet, Google News or Apple News, and they'll tell it to you from like a policy perspective. They'll talk about a law in Massachusetts or a law in Connecticut that's being proposed. And they may or may not talk to like a mental health expert. They may or may not talk to a psychologist or someone else in the actual mental health world that can talk about it from a clinical perspective and what the impact might be. And we go out of our way to make sure that we do have that perspective and that we're getting the information about how is this actually going to make an impact in clients' lives in that state, or how is this going to make an impact in practitioners' lives in that state, and talk about it more from that perspective. Like, why is this important to you as a practitioner? So
nice. I appreciate that you are trying to make sure that your clinicians are getting the most up-to-date and relevant information. Because like you mentioned, a lot of times the newsreels that we see on Google or whatever are not there from the policy perspective or from a news person specifically, and it doesn't really speak to how it impacts or how it could impact a clinician working with their clients on a day-to-day basis. So that is one of the challenges of publishing this type of publication. Can you tell me some more? You mentioned printing cost and things like that. So can you tell me some more about that?
Yeah, I think part of me wasn't really prepared for the costs associated with traditional print publications, because I always thought in my mind just the cost of putting together a newspaper or a publication and then binding it. I didn't consider that the mailing costs would actually be higher than the printing costs. So that's something we've had to grapple with, which is that when I first took over the publication, mailing costs were almost the same as printing costs, and they have almost doubled in the past 5 years for a publication of our type. And that just has a huge impact on our expenses. And that's one of the reasons we took the publication, I think it was from 10 issues a year, and we took it down to a quarterly publication, because that's more affordable to us. We made it, we expanded each issue so it was larger. We could get almost as many articles in, but we also got the new articles by just publishing online, because that's where people expect to find their news and their updates now. So the eventual goal is to move entirely online, because there are just so few people that are looking for and need, I should say need, maybe not so much want, but need a print publication. Right. I certainly, as an older, I'm a Generation Xer, but I still like the feel of a print publication, and I still get a magazine or two delivered to my home. But I completely understand that that's a dying format in this world anyway, especially with some of the costs that we're seeing. And that advertisers just, this is an advertising supported publication, and advertisers just weren't stepping up to continue wanting to include print advertising as a part of their marketing budget for the year. Although we haven't really hiked or increased the prices of our advertising since I've had the publication, it is still a big enough cost that a lot of organizations just aren't interested in doing it anymore.
Understood, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
So how can psychologists get or access this publication? How can they, is it a subscription? Is it a membership? What all comes with that? Sure. Tell us some more about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So short answer is that you can access all of our content on our website, which is NEPSY.com, NEPSY.com. And a lot of the content, a lot of the articles from the past 20 years are on that website. And more recent articles from like the most recent issue do require a subscription, because we're trying to nudge people over to paying for content. And the subscription prices are, I think they're like $10 a year.
Oh.
We try to make it super reasonable. We know clinicians don't have a lot of money, even for business expenses and whatnot. So we have a model that we think we can make work for into the future by focusing on the website and making some of the content not available unless you have a subscription, and then making some of the content available for free. And so if you want to get a subscription to this great publication, you can go to the website, nepsy.com, and sign up, and we'll be happy to get you going. For as long as we continue to publish a print publication, that subscription fee will also cover guaranteed access to the print version that we will mail to your home. If for some reason we either stop doing the print publication in the future, or what we do is sometimes we cull the mailing list for each issue and we only send it to a certain subset of people on our list, because like I said, we send out to over 10,000 people, but we'll make sure that all of the subscribers who've paid, they always get a print issue no matter what. So for as long as we continue printing that and mailing that, you would get a copy of it.
That led me to another question. So does every psychologist in that region, do they just automatically receive it by mail?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay, John, yeah. That's amazing. Okay.
That is a testament to Denise's vision, which, you know, she put together. She got the mailing lists over the years from each state psychological association, and we maintain a mailing list of over 10,000 psychologists. Yeah.
Wow, that is really awesome what you're doing for the profession. This whole time I was thinking that the whole thing was a part of a subscription, but
yeah,
to be able to provide that level of access for everyone, regardless of a paid feature, is pretty amazing. That's awesome. So with the online subscription, does anything else come with it? I know a lot of times publications have things like job boards or access to, you know, ads for different office space or anything like that. Or does something else come with it?
Yeah, that's a great question. We actually do have a classified section, and so you can post it. Like, we have a lot of clinicians who have free office space throughout the week, and so they will post a classified ad to the website, and it also goes in the print edition, asking it, you know, trying to get people to fill their free office space for certain days of the week, or sometimes they'll have a whole office, you know, suite of offices that is available. So we do that. We do jobs. We have job listings posted to both our website and classified section. Accessing those listings as a reader is free, obviously. But if you wanted to post a classified ad for a job or for office space that you're trying to let out, that does have an additional cost. That's one of the ways that we try and make money.
Understood. Got to be able to pay for those shipping costs. So if, let's just say, I'll use myself as an example. So I am a social worker in North Carolina. Is there a benefit to me to access the New England Psychologist, to pay for a subscription, to be able to get those online services if I'm not in the New England region?
Most of our information is going to be primarily of interest to people that live in the 6 New England states, but just like the New England Journal of Medicine, what we're going to be trying to do starting this year, actually, is to expand our coverage and actually be focused more on clinically relevant articles that would be of relevance to any type of clinician, not just psychologists, anywhere in the country. We're trying to actually expand our scope and become a publication that has a greater interest base, a greater user base than what we traditionally have, you know, focused on these 6 New England states. Wonderful 6 New England states. I live in one of them. But at the same time, I realized a lot of the things we talk about, especially in the clinically oriented articles, would be of interest to other types of clinicians anywhere in the United States. So.
Right. That's kind of what I was thinking. Just as you were mentioning some of the trends and things that you're seeing or some of the topics that you cover, those are things that while it may not necessarily be happening in my specific state or my region that I live in, they may be on the way moving south or just something that I may find interesting. And I've also encountered a lot of clinicians that may be licensed in multiple states. And so that is something also that everyone may be able to access. Yep. A little subscription there.
Yep.
Okay.
We have, we have a few columnists too that focus, like one of them is focused on talking about practice issues and the topics that she covers are of interest to any clinician anywhere. Right. Talks about overscheduling, yourself and dealing with stress and whatnot and being a private practitioner. Right. So definitely.
Right. Okay. So tell me, what have you enjoyed most about your time with the New England Psychologist? What's your favorite part?
The best part for me is reading every article and every issue. I'm the final set of eyes on each issue before it goes out for print and for the online articles. And I learn so much through our articles that it really helps keep me informed. I'm not in clinical practice actively right now, but I have plenty of friends and colleagues who are. And so when things come up that I think might be of interest to them, I flag it and say, hey, we just published this issue and send them the link. Because it's through a publication like this that you can kind of keep up on the myriad changes that occur every year in different state legislatures, with the laws, with policies, with what might be coming down the pike federally, insurance changes, this, that. The list is almost endless. I know a lot of clinicians, when I talk to them, they do feel a little overwhelmed and they don't have the time to really keep up with a lot of different stuff. And I feel like we try and honor their busy schedule to try and keep things, super relevant to being a practitioner in this modern age.
Right. I completely agree with you. As a clinician myself, it is sometimes very overwhelming to try to comb through the different policy changes, federal levels, things on the state level, things based on my region, practice changes, insurance policies, all of that that happens. Just even mentioning it just now, it's a lot to try to comb through and sort through and figure out where I stand in the middle of that. So publications like yours really do speak to clinicians and helping us do our best work. So thank you for that. Leave us with a final word on the importance of independent journalism. It sounds like it's very important to you.
It is. Without publications like New England Psychologist, I don't know where practitioners would get, the psychologists that are in our area would get this kind of information, because the big national organization for psychologists, they don't focus on regions to this level. Each state has a psychological association, and even if they offer a newsletter or something, it doesn't offer this level of journalism that we put into every issue and every month online. So it's really important to have someone to help you not only keep up with all the changes, but help interpret and analyze those changes in context to understand what it might mean to you as a clinical practitioner. So
nice. Thank you for that. And so, John, where can the listeners learn more about the New England Psychologist? Are you on social media other than your website? Are there other ways to access?
We are on nepsy.com. That is the place to find us mostly. I do post some articles on some of my personal social feeds on Threads. And I think that's it. I mean, we're not a lot of other places other than our website, and that's definitely something I need to look into changing.
Okay. Yes, because I know a lot of our guests and listeners do frequent social media sites, like maybe Instagram or even LinkedIn. So that is definitely a way to expand what the great work that you're already doing.
That's a goal for 2024.
Nice. I look forward to seeing you there. And thank you so much, John, for being here with us today.
Sure thing. It was a pleasure to spend this time with you. Thank you.
Yes, sir. And thank you to our listeners for taking the time to join John and I. The resources for this episode and an archive of all of our other episodes can be found on our webpage at triadhq.com/BHD. And we look forward to having you back with us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community, and if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.